Okay, everybody, hi. And I'm as long as I have the time, I'm going to try to move forward with program 57 in the externalization of the hierarchy. And this seems still to be an article from 1919 on basic approach to the new world religion and religion in general. And then I think we'll take a leap to 1946 and then later come back to the beginning of the book where maybe about 60 pages are not yet done. I wanted to get into the most relevant material. So here it is, still the 24th of May, and we're in the sign Gemini. Religious organizations in the New Age. Let us return to our consideration of the spread of the deepened religious ideals and the growth of the new religious organisms rather than organizations. He always pushes for a consideration of organisms as living systems rather than the ossification which is possible in organizations, but not so much in organisms. Okay. In the process of transmuting the old form, which he said is the wise thing to do so that people do not feel that the form to which they adhere is entirely abandoned, it's a fourth-ray technique of connecting the past with the present and the future. In the process of transmuting the old form and so releasing the imprisoned life, there are two things which are steadily held in view by the guides of our evolution. Okay, number one, first, that the general public serves or is dominated by the concrete mind and is unable to grasp abstractions. I think what we see there is the Antikorana is not built. The personality is the main area of identification. And basically, you know, the concrete-mindedness of the masses blends with emotion and prevents a wider and more spiritual outlook. It is the form which matters to them the most, for they are conservative and cling to the familiar. The church is intended to serve the masses and is not intended to be of use except as a field of service to the esotericists of the world, for they heed not the form to the same extent, having contacted somewhat the inner compelling life. So the concrete mindedness of the masses is to be considered. And secondly, the church movement, like all else, is but a temporary expedient and serves but as a transient resting place for the evolving life. Well, it doesn't seem like there is much progress in it because it is a resting place. It's not advancing the way esoterically inclined people would wish to advance. Eventually, there will appear the Church Universal. and its definite outlines will appear towards the close of this century. So if this was written in 1919, we have experienced the close of the century, and perhaps something of this very inclusive Church Universal. In this connection, forget not the wise prophecy of HBB as touching events at the close of this century. Well, I thought that was the 21st century, that occultism must win the day. In this connection, don't forget HBB's prophecy. The Church will be nurtured into activity by the Christ and his disciples when the outpouring of the Christ principle, the true second coming, has been accomplished. No date for the Advent do I set, but the time will not be long. Well, now, you know, I guess this is before the fifth ray ashram raced ahead and uncovered the secrets of atomic energy, which maybe, I think, changed everything. And it was anticipated that members of the hierarchy would be emerging in the 20th century and that the Christ himself could appear before the end of the 20th century. Now it looks much more like the 22nd century will be the time of his appearance, although one cannot say with any degree of certainty, nor is one to attempt to do so. It's simply foolish to say, lo here, lo there. Here is the Christ in East London running around waiting to be discovered, and then a picture is produced which must be anything but the Christ, you know. But people are not psychologically aware sufficiently to be able to identify what the radiation that comes forth from that photograph or whatever it is. Anyway, the Tibetan wisely does not set a date because I don't even think the Christ has set a date. I think he has said this must be accomplished, this much must be accomplished, and I do not come forth until it is. Then it has to do with sharing and the general peace and also the house cleaning, which does appear to be underway. Anyway, this was written in the 20th century, as all the Bailey material is, and quite early in the 20th century, if 1919 is the time that it came forward. The Christian Church, in its many branches, can serve as a St. John the Baptist, as a voice crying in the wilderness, and as a nucleus through which world illumination may be accomplished. Well, you know, that I think that task was broadened and given over to the new group of world servers. The Christian Church alone was not enough and is not enough. I indicate the hope, I do not assert the fact. Interesting, assert a fact, the first ray word of power. Its work is intended to be the holding of a broad platform. The Church must show a wide tolerance and teach no revolutionary doctrines or cling to any reactionary ideas. Okay. Well, that has been somewhat the case, but there have been the reactionary ideas becoming more panic-stricken as the decades pass. The church as a teaching factor should take the great basic doctrines and, shattering the old forms in which they are expressed and held, show their true and inner spiritual significance. The prime work of the church is to teach, allying itself, therefore, with the second ray, the sixth ray allying with the second ray. The prime work of the church is to teach and teach ceaselessly, preserving the outer appearance in order to reach the many who are accustomed to church usages. So DK shows himself to be ever practical. Teachers must be trained, Bible knowledge must be spread, the sacraments must be mystically interpreted, and the power of the church to heal must be demonstrated. It's kind of interesting, if this was written in 1919, you know, Alice Bailey was quite strongly involved in the church in general through some earlier years. And I wonder if this was not a bridging subject to help make her more accustomed to working with the Tibetan and to demonstrate to her that he was no enemy of the church, even though he was a Tibetan. Yet he did have, we are told, two European incarnations, I think, significant ones. I don't know how far back that goes, but maybe Cleinias, the just Greek, who was the assistant to Pythagoras, and maybe Plotinus, the Neoplatonist, who wrote the Aeneid. And, you know, there was Proclus and the Amblicus and Porphyry, I think. A number of those prominent Neoplatonists, but I think he was among the most prominent. The three main channels through which the preparation for the New Age is going on might be regarded as the church, the Masonic fraternity, well, a brotherhood, but also now including women, and the educational field. All right. This is a thought with which I think we are familiar, and different rays work through the different organizations, I think, in terms of soul or monad. The three main channels, Masonry, the first ray, the church, the second ray, predominantly, and the educational field, the third ray. And there are crossovers, of course. All of them are as yet in relatively static condition, and all are yet failing to meet the need and to respond to the inner pressure. I think after World War II, all of these organizations were under scrutiny, because what they had taught and the training they gave was not enough to forestall the war. But in all of these three movements, okay, that's what he calls them, disciples of the great ones are to be found, and they are steadily gathering momentum and will before long enter upon their designated task. I think many changes have occurred in these three. Masonry is reforming. The church has had its attempt to be more widely assimilable in its teachings. Education has undergone many experiments, whether we deem them good and productive or not so. So, you know, 100 years have passed since this was written, if this is the 1919 writing. the Masonic movement, when it can be divorced from politics, you know, because there's so many Ray One people in it, and social ends, you know, the gosh, what is it called? The Shriners, yeah. The social end of Masonry, but they, you know, the charities they tend to support burn hospitals so necessary, you know, but sometimes they joke and call it the House of Darkness because you can just kind of go next door and have a drink, you know, and it's not the same in a Masonic temple. I've been a Mason since 1974, not active recently, but quite active in the beginning, and observed many things, some of them with the seeds of progressivism and others caught in some kind of stasis. The Masonic movement, when it can be divorced from politics and social ends and from its present paralyzing condition of inertia, in which the, as the Tibetan says, the secrets are safely embalmed, will meet the need of those who can and should wield power. It is the custodian of the law, it is the home of the mysteries, and the seat of initiation. Well, that is so powerful a phrase or sentence. This is what Masonry can be, and one day will be, the home of the mysteries and the seat of initiation. And didn't want me to leave that out, the custodian of the law. It holds in its symbolism the ritual of deity, and the way of salvation is pictorially preserved in its work. The methods of deity are demonstrated in its temples, and under the all-seeing eye, the work can go forward. It is a far more occult organization that can be realized and is intended to be the training school for the upcoming advanced occultists. Not yet. It is in its ceremonials lie hid the wielding of the forces connected with the growth and life of the kingdoms of nature and the unfoldment of the divine aspects in man. In the comprehension of its symbolism will come the power to cooperate with the divine plan. It meets the needs of those who work on the first ray of will or power, you know, and we're not just talking about personalities here. We're talking about souls and even monads, the atmic aspect, the spiritual will, the custodian of the law, the home of the mysteries, and the seat of initiation. And, you know, to decipher the ways of God in its rituals, this is a task, but if it's meant to train advanced occultists, then that task can be successfully undertaken. The church finds its mission in the helping of the devotee in different ways, you see, in aiding the great public, which is innately religious and of goodwill. It hides in its heart those who vibrate to the great ray of love, the second ray of love, wisdom. Christ himself works through it and by its means seeks to contact the vast Christian public. It is the leaven in his hands to leaven the whole lump. And being in a form comprehended by the people, it can touch the great masses of seeking souls. So it's of maybe a wider utility, a more generalized utility than the Masonic movement. But then we do live more at this time on a second ray planet in a second ray solar system. So the second ray, and I think, of course, the sixth ray will be involved. People don't realize that they are conditioned by the rays. They don't realize what a ray is. How would they? There are psychological types, of course, and maybe they know something about that. But eventually the ray psychology will penetrate many human consciousnesses, and they will understand why they adhere to certain forms of devotion and activity, why certain forms are of great interest to them and not to others. Okay, now, by means of the educational work of the world, the great Lord, he seems to be behind all this, you know. The great Lord seeks to reach those of the intelligent public who cannot be reached by means of ceremonial and symbolism, as in Masonry, or by religious means and ritual, as in the church. Of course, ritual is also involved with the work of Masonry, naturally. It touches the masses and those in whom the intelligence aspect predominates to the lessening of the other two aspects, lessening of law, lessening of devotion. It aids those men who are predominantly on the third ray of activity. The word predominance may be suggesting the monadic orientation. There are many from the moon chain who are found among the disciples at this time, and they can have the third ray monad, and probably the majority of them from the moon chain does, and the majority of those from the previous major solar system would have the third ray or one of its divisions, as that ray of intelligence would at first supervise rays 4, 5, 6, 7. Anyway, the rays are given, and along one or other of these lines of service, one's work will be found. And do we know which line it may be for us? I think probably some of us have an idea. In all these bodies, there are to be found esoteric groups which are the custodians of the inner teaching and whose uniformity in aspiration and in technique is one. Well, you know, these groups would not be well known among the rank and file of the membership, but they do exist. I remember working in Masonry and trying to bring about occult study among some of the more significant masons, but there was a gap. A gap and insufficient interest. I've been involved with the church, but mostly from the musical angle, and with education mostly. So maybe, you know, a number of us have that overlap whereby we can understand through some degree of participation how each one of these works. These inner groups consist of occult students and of those who are in direct or occasional touch with the masters, and those of those whose souls are in sufficient control so that the will of the hierarchy may be communicated and gradually filter down to the physical brain. So this is the something about the membership of the people in the inherent occult groups in all three. Now, maybe a lot of us know something about the occult groups in relation to education. And there are certain forms of masonry which are now predominantly occult. I'm thinking of AUM, Ancient Universal Mysteries, the one that I know most about. And when it comes to the church, well, I don't think I know so many, but we're told that the Master Jesus meets with certain of the prelates in the higher positions, and that they are his students. Whether or not a pope would be his student, I suppose it depends on the quality of the pope, and not just automatically upon the fulfillment of a particular task or entering a particular role. These groups, which constitute the true inner esoteric group, are many, but their membership is yet small. For the fact that a student may belong to any of the outer esoteric groups, so-called, is no indication of his true esoteric status. Well, I guess he's saying in a better way the very thing that I was just trying to say. Simply being in a position does not mean that one has the capabilities which ideally would be associated with that position. When the few who are the true esoteric students of the world know the difference between etheric and astral forms, between mental clairaudience and clairvoyance and their astral counterparts, between the elementals of thought and the elementals of nature, then will the Christ and his church have a real esoteric group on the physical plane, and the outer organization receive the needed stimulation. Well, we're a while away from that, but there are isolated individuals that have this, and we have to learn from the devas the method of etheric vision, and we have to develop the ability to come and go to the astral plane, and the mind has to be held steady in the light of the soul, and perhaps the light in the head has to appear as brain radiance due to soul contact. And that is why it is necessary, says the Tibetan, to work with students at this time and train them in the nature of true occultism. When we understand better the significance of time in prevision and of force in movement, and when we comprehend more fully the laws that control the subtler bodies, and through them, therefore, the laws that function on the planes whereon those bodies express, themselves, then will there be more intelligent and more useful work offered in cooperation with the occult hierarchy. So these are requirements. And as yet, we're pretty far from the fulfillment of these requirements. Okay, these are listed requirements. You know, certain important discriminations. And some of them are quite occult. When we understand better the significance of time in prevision, because maybe what will eventuate is shown, but the exact moment of precipitation is not shown, depending upon the engineered circumstances. And when we understand better force in movement, sounds like physics and metaphysics, our planetary logos is known as the great physicist. And when we comprehend more fully the laws that control the subtler bodies, maybe when we study a treatise on white magic, that will come to us. And through them, therefore, the laws that function on the planes whereon those bodies express, a lot of, magical studies here, express themselves, then there will be more intelligent and more useful work offered. DK says, study the White Magic book. Yes, study it. Because the day will come when I can offer you the real formulas and you will be better prepared because of your earlier studies. In the esoteric group, which is composed of the true spiritual esotericists found in all exoteric occult groups in the church, by whatever name it may be called, and in Masonry, you have the three paths leading to initiation. And basically all of these means of teaching and training will present their candidates and their groups of candidates for initiation. So, the schools, the new esoteric schools, the church, the Masonic fraternity will present to the initiator, whether it's the Christ or maybe even at some point Sanat Kumara, groups which can be initiated, the coming of group initiation is very much needed and expected, and is all part of the space-time schedule of our planetary logos. As yet, they are not used, and one of the things that will eventuate when the new universal religion has sway and the nature of esotericism is understood will be the utilization of the banded esoteric organisms, the Masonic organism and the church organism as initiating centers. Yes, as initiating centers. Now, not yet is this occurring. The teaching, the training must come first. And we are still in these organizations, hopefully organisms, far away from successful engagement in the necessary teaching and training. Initiating centers. notice he is very specific about calling them organisms, because he doesn't want the criticism and the rigidity of organizations to taint the process in these groups. These three groups converge as their inner sanctuaries are approached. There is no dissociation between the one universal church, the sacred inner lodge of all true Masons, and the innermost circles of the esoteric societies, such as, you know, what should we call them? The Theosophical Society. The hierarchy itself is the society of organized and illumined minds. And the closer you get to the summit of the mountain, the more the inner processes converge and become similar until the kind of planetary initiation of which the Tibetan speaks in Initiation Human and Solar does take place in all of them. Three types of men have their need met. Three major rays are expressed, and the three paths to the master are trodden, leading all three to the same portal and the same hierophant. And we begin to think that eventually it must be not only the Christ, but the Lord of the world. So, you know, the idea is that the rays, how does he say it? So they fight and kill each other at the lower levels of the mountain. And as they ascend towards the summit, they begin to approximate each other and see and mutually support each other. So there's no reason, as we reach the summit, why the seven rays, though differentiated far below, should not support each other at the peak, which they do. It must not be forgotten that only those souls who are on the probationary path, or the path of discipleship, will form the nucleus of the coming world religion. It exists on the inner planes for the purpose of gathering out of all the churches those who have reached the point of evolution where they can consciously and of their own free will place their feet upon the path which leads to the center of peace, that is Shambhala, who can in full awareness turn their eyes upon the great Lord. It must be difficult to do, and transmute the life of worldly endeavor into the life of service. So one must be, what shall we say, souls, at least souls, upon the probationary path before one can do these things. Then they're ready to really tread the path to higher states of initiation. And so the average churchgoer, even the average leader of a church, minister, priest, whatever, is not yet in that position. I remember my old teacher. You know, he was close to 80 when I met him. Maybe he was 75, I don't know. And then I studied with him somehow for 7 years. And sometimes we would talk about the clergy or the ministers, and he would simply say, well, they're not there yet, you know. And by and large, that would be correct, although there are some church leaders who definitely are there, and they would be the ones with whom the Master Jesus met or meets. So So the nucleus of the coming world religion will be gathered out of the disciples and probationers. One would have to be at least that to be gathered into a directing body within the coming universal religion. The first detachment gathered into the coming church will be found to be a part of the present great band of servers. I suppose he means the new group of world servers, at least now. But he extends the idea. These have down the ages been associated with the Christ in his work, and have probably quite a history in the church. Remember always the fact that of the work he did in connection with the Last Advent, and remember likewise that in the turning of the cyclic wheel, in the evolution of the spiral, similar conditions will eventuate, the same needs arise, and the same egos incarnate that were present in days of old in Palestine. So he's giving sort of a hope to the disciples of Christ as they surrounded him in that ashramic experiment long ago. I mean, they obviously have progressed, and some of them were already high initiates, like Paul, and maybe Peter was quite high, certainly John the Beloved. So there is a factor of reincarnation at work, and he tells us, you know, in terms of the great battle in the Kurukshetra in 4 million years ago, that the same leaders who led then were the leaders in the Second World War, which was the Great Battle of Kurukshetra on a higher turn of the spiral. So people have a tendency to return to the place and to the contexts in which they previously participated. The numbers of those associated with him will be greatly increased, for all who knew him in earlier incarnations in the ancient East, all whom he cured or taught, all who contacted him or in any way incurred karma with him or with the Master Jesus will have the opportunity to cooperate at this time. So the number is considerable. It's not just Christianity that we are discussing. It's the Lord Maitreya. It is Krishna, you know, earlier incarnations of the one we call now the Christ, and the Master Jesus is also connected. And he had maybe a different kind of karmic association. He was more the great general as he was when he was Joshua, but he certainly worked his way into the temple proceedings and became Jeshua and Joshua the high priest and so forth. And then the carpenter, you know, and some say the builder of crosses. Quite a difference from a high status in the church or in the temple. In fact, when he visited the temple, he caused the disturbance. I think that was Jesus, not so much the Christ. We have to differentiate between what the Tibetan calls the gold and silver threads. When Christ was using the body, it's the gold thread. And when Jesus was at home within his vehicle, it was the silver thread. And someday they will be, you know, disentangled. Each sincere aspirant who is closely connected with the present church organizations, who feels a close link with the Christ and who loves him, can be practically sure that in Palestine they saw him, knew him, and mayhap served and loved him, you know, among the 70 or the interested 500. We're told that he gathered around him the exemplification of an ashram, but there were also those in the wider circle who were not as close as the 12, with Paul taking the place of Judas. There have been so many excuses made for Judas, as if it was done on purpose, you know, and the Christ collaborated with him in his own betrayal. Now, you know, is that true? And if it were true, why would Judas have committed suicide? But it does seem that the law required that he do what he did, or at least foresaw it. We'll have to straighten that out as we go. Some of the more modern dramas give a different twist to the Judas character. The sacraments, properly understood, serve to strengthen this link and realization, such as the and such a one as that of baptism, when entered upon with understanding, will draw forth oft a response from the great Lord himself, even now. Oh, interesting. Usually there's a baptism at the outset, you know, some days after birth, and maybe later for some, you know, with all kinds of strictures and restrictions and customs surrounding the baptism. Will it be partial immersion in water? Will it be total immersion in water? You know, we fight over the symbols. It is almost as if a golden strand were directed from his heart to the heart of the servant, a strand unbreakable and unfathomable, which with each administration of any of the holy rites in the succession of lives becomes stronger, broader, and brighter. So I guess maybe people experience something of the old connection when passing through the sacraments at the present time, because this golden strand cannot be broken, so it probably can be a very emotional experience. Okay, a call came in that I had to take, and I hope I have not messed it up somehow. Just a couple, you know, another 10 minutes here in this particular program. So anyway, the connection with the Christ lasts. And I know some people who have the distinct impression that they worked with him, knew him, served him. Of course, he would have appeared as the Master Jesus, but so often the Christ, well, or the initiate Jesus, but so often the Christ was in possession of the vehicle. So eventually these many strands will become reabsorbed into the source when the body of the Christ, one of the seven heavenly men on the second or monadic plane, is completed in full expression. That's very interesting. For each one linked to him becomes, in a vital sense, a cell in his body. Now that is really of interest, and I don't recall ever having noted that as I should. So a strand unbreakable and unfathomable, and which with each administration of any of the holy rites in the succession of lives becomes stronger, broader, and brighter once this original strand is established. Eventually, these many strands will become reabsorbed into their source when the body of the Christ, one of the seven heavenly men on the second or monadic plane, is completed in full expression. Now, you know, he's said to be on the ray path. This was written, however, in 1919. Is he in some sense one of the seven heavenly men? Usually the heavenly men or planetary logoi are produced, or at least the vehicle is produced, by a combination of solar angels, maybe 49 of them, producing the vehicle of the planetary logos. That's a bit mysterious to me, and I'm thinking about it. And each one connected with the Christ becomes a cell in his body. Well, if he becomes a heavenly man in some sense, it's easy to understand that the human beings linked to him would be as cells. But this is obscure, I think, and a little different from the fate of the Christ as a ray lord, or a ray, and eventually a being who travels to Sirius and there establishes himself, or is established as, an initiate. So more to ponder, no? When the this the initiate Paul truly sensed anew, that we are all part of him in some way. Via this strand passes the power to strengthen, to stimulate, to vivify, and to bless. And this is the true apostolic succession. All true disciples are priests unto the Lord. Now, this is very Christian terminology, but it certainly offers the occult explanation of some of the biblical phrases. Very interesting. A strand was created, sacraments are repeated, the strands are strengthened, it results in the individual becoming a cell in the body of the Christ as he becomes something else. It rather looks like a heavenly man, but a heavenly man is a planetary logos, and he's not on the path of the planetary logo, he's on the ray path, and then on the path to Sirius, which is the fourth path, and can change into the third, but I don't think the path of planetary logoi is his. So there are certain things to be worked out here. There is no question, therefore, that the work to be done in familiarizing the general public with the nature of the mysteries is of paramount importance at this time. We know that the Christ will himself officiate in the mysteries, especially publicly at the first initiation. These mysteries will be restored to outer expression through the medium of the church and the Masonic fraternity, if those groups leave off being organizations with material purpose and become organisms with living objectives. I think this is somehow a very important section. I guess most of us have read quite a bit of the Tibetan, maybe not everything. And when I run into something that I cannot be certain I've read, I'm usually quite taken by it, as I am by these several sentences and paragraphs. So the restoration of the mysteries, the Master R will be involved in that too. And even the second initiation will be restored in an outer sense, but not so exoterically as the first initiation, because that basically is what lies before the majority of human beings who have approached the fifth kingdom of nature. When the Great One comes with his disciples and initiates, we shall have, after a period of intensive work upon the physical plane, beginning around the year 1940, well, I think, you know, here I think the plans as they were intended are presented. I think the masters were intended to arrive, some of them, in the 20th century, the Christ before the end of the 20th century, but it didn't happen because I insist on thinking that the situation was too dangerous with the release of atomic energy and with the descent of humanity into the Second World War, which maybe was not fully anticipated in the year 1919. When the Great One comes with his disciples and initiates, we shall have, after a period of intensive work on the physical plane beginning around the year 1940, see, that was the very beginning of the Second World War, obviously not anticipated in this writing, the restoration of the mysteries and their exoteric presentation as a consequence of the first initiation. We shall have the restoration of the mysteries and their exoteric presentation as a consequence of the first initiation. Okay. So this was what was planned, and in initiation, human solar, we read, you know, a little bit more about that. That was the intention. Why can this be so? Because the Christ, as you know, is the Hierophant of the first and second initiations, and he will, if the preparatory work is faithfully and well done, administer the first initiation in the inner sanctuaries of those two bodies. Not so much the educational body, but even there, candidates will be presented, but more in masonry and more in the church. Many faithful workers will, during his period of work on earth, take the first initiation. It's not as easy as people judge. And simply to be a reader of the books does not guarantee that one has taken the first initiation. There was a great reader of the books and publicist of the books and financier of the books, but he was filled with glamour and he had not taken the first initiation. He was the one in DK's group of disciples who was pointed out as not having stood before the Christ, which in his case meant the first initiation, though he was alive with aspiration to the possibility, a third ray soul and sixth ray personality at the time. Many faithful workers will take the first initiation, and some few will take the second. It's much rarer, maybe, than is thought. Why? Because there's usually quite a length of time, not always, but quite a lengthy period between the first and second initiation. The race has now reached the point where many souls are on the probationary path and need but the heightening of their vibration, made possible by his presence, to reach the portal of the path itself. And I'm not sure, what can I do here? Yes, the portal of the path itself. This is the first initiation and entry into the fifth kingdom of nature. And now, what is it that you all can do? What is the condition surrounding the aspirants of the world today? We have a world full of unrest, a world full of pain, sorrow, and strife, a world in which the emotional bodies of humanity are in a condition of tremendous disturbance, a world in which animals, men, women, and children suffer. Notice how animals are included, agonize and die. It's certainly become worse in a way. One only has to see the videos of slaughterhouses and it's almost unbearable. A world in which hunger, sin, sickness, famine, rapine, and murder stalk unarrested. A world in which the forms of religion exist, but the life is gone, in which science is prostituted to the ends of money and hate, and in which the produce of the earth is not for the sustenance of the race, but for the nourishing of the purses of the few. A world in which faith is oft the subject of scoffing, in which unselfishness is regarded as the attribute of the fool. This is quite an indictment, wouldn't you say? And in which love is exploited in its lowest expression, sex. Is this the atmosphere in which the Christ and his disciples can breathe? Is this a condition in which they can find harmonious influences? Is this the state of affairs in which they can work and live? Are the vibrations extant upon this planet similar to theirs and to which they can respond? We know that it is not so and that they much must be done to facilitate their work. So what can we do? And I think that will take us, after this indictment and this basic statement of the impossibility of their immediate return because of the condition which we, humanity, have developed. We can take it this far. And then we'll pause concerning what we can do, because there's still quite a bit left before we reach this section on the externalization of the ashrams. And it's getting a bit late here. And so my thoughts about producing anything worth saying tell me that it's best to stop at this point. Page 516. We have reached page 516, I think, from 510. Yeah. 510 to 516. Yep. So let's go down to where it all seems to start. It will be of great interest to us. It's getting very current, isn't it? Very current. And what can we do? Well, we do want to know that, don't we? So this is the end of program 57. It's about 1 hour and 5 minutes, okay. And 510 to, what did I say? 510 to 516. I don't know actually how long this one goes, or the date at which it will be given, probably not today, unless some great sweep of energy overcomes me, and it will be program 58. sometimes it looks like the work is so demanding as one looks ahead at all of the books that might be able to be spoken of, you know, and of course one is not the Tibetan and one cannot speak with his authority and with his scope of wisdom, but one can connect different aspects of the teaching which perhaps remained disconnected in our minds, but can be seen as connected if the chance is given. So it is my hope that everything is correct here, and much love and many blessings to everybody, and studies, let the studies go on as they should, and we will stop this recording now and later go on to program number 58. You know, there's still somehow about 200 pages left in this text, and actually about 190 in the actual text. I think, you know, because I expand the font, there's more pages remaining in this document than actually are in the book. Well, it'll be so interesting to see the Tibetans' retrospective on what actually happened in the 75 or 80 years since he wrote last with Alice Bailey. And we don't know who the amanuensis will be, you know, whether more on the first ray or the third ray, or then maybe continuing on the second ray line, we don't know. And we don't know whether the amanuensis will be Alice Bailey herself, and to what extent the technology will supplement the amanuensis. I think it should certainly be possible to deliver more dictation than had been possible before with typewriters and maybe, you know, whiteout or corrector type or all that kind of thing. Now we have the possibility of a much more successful presentation through electronics. Well, I remember when I first heard of word processing, I think it was Jimmy Carter that was using it. And I said, well, you mean you can erase a word or a sentence just like that after having used many rolls of correctotype or the white fluid, you know, and been through many mechanical problems. And so it will be a different kind of modus operandi for the Tibetan, and he will decide what can be done. Okay, everybody, we'll go on with this when we can, and many blessings and lots of love, and let's just keep assimilating in preparation for a deeper understanding of the new teaching when it is offered, the third installment, and let us hope that we have the wisdom to recognize it, because the Theosophical Society or so many, you know, members or people in prominent places in the Theosophical Society did not recognize it when Alice Bailey began to write, although I think they were closet by night readers, some of them. It's impossible to pick up a book like Cosmic Fire and just said, okay, well, Alice Bailey wrote this all on her own, you know. It's impossible. And probably they admitted it, but they to themselves, but would not admit it publicly. So here we go. And we will carry on as we can.